Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on, it's got to be our busiest show in a long, long time. Our busiest coronavirus show. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Draft is Thursday. That's absolutely one of my favorite things in sports. 1 hour from now, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong. We all watched the doc last night. Joy Taylor is joining me. I know where Joy was last night at 6 Pacific and 9 Eastern. It's where I was. And I imagine 90% or more of my listeners and viewers today were last night. How are you, Joy?
I'm great, man. That was fantastic. It was amazing. It really was, just to relive parts of that and learn new things about the dynasty and just have everyone do it together. It was great.
It really was great. I have so many thoughts. I wrote notes for, you know, the entire couple of hours. I'm prone to do that. And, you know, let me just start with this. A lot of people are going to naturally move into the, you know, Michael's way better than LeBron. Let me just say, folks, if anybody watching or listening to this show, if any of you are ever the second best person on the planet at something, I'm not going to take a shot at you. LeBron does more good things with a basketball in his hand than I've ever seen. Michael's probably the most relentless player. But if you're number two in the world, congratulations. I tip my cap. The fact that we only now debate MJ and LeBron, we don't debate MJ and Hakeem, MJ and Kareem, MJ and Magic, MJ and Bird, MJ. We don't. We don't even debate it. We don't even go there. That tells you the greatness, not only of Michael, but of LeBron. Let me repeat something I said last week. That, and it was amplified. I knew about it and I watched it and it was worse than I thought. But the fact that this Bulls team, the best American sports team of my life, won 6 titles with all the chaos with the front office. They were fighting their front office. I already had a reservoir of respect for Phil Jackson. He is balancing a GM that resents some players that resent the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, which I told you last week is the cheap guy, the baseball-loving cheap guy. He won't give Scottie Pippen a new deal. I just couldn't live with myself. MJ carried the league, and halfway through it, he wasn't being paid. He was carrying the whole league, forget the Bulls. It's just remarkable how Phil Jackson and MJ's focus and Phil's just moxie and intelligence could balance what was a chaotic mess. Virtually every dynasty of my life has great ownership or great management. You know, Pat Riley with Miami and the Heatles or the Rooney family or, you know, Kraft and Belichick. I mean, Tom Brady didn't have to deal with nonsense all day. Remarkable what they overcame. It also, and you may find this strange, it made me think more than once about Russell Westbrook. This is why Michael loves Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook plays hard every night. Every night. No possessions off. And I know you think I hate Westbrook. No, he drives me crazy. But there's a lot of Michael Jordan with Westbrook. When you watch Michael Jordan, and Jordan has said Westbrook's his favorite current player, sometimes Westbrook will do things and you're like, are you nuts? Slow it down, shift down. But then I watched Michael Jordan last night. And Michael Jordan in his second year got hurt. And the doctor said, you can play on it, but if you get hurt again, your career's over. And Michael held a grudge against his owner because his owner was like, I don't think you should do this. I don't think we should take a risk. Michael, I wanted to go, Michael, are you crazy? You're willing to risk your career? Just sit it out. You're not a title team. I thought to myself, Michael's got a little crazy in him. And Westbrook's got some crazy in him. But in a world where players take the night off and load management, I gotta be honest with you. I came out of that thing and I'm like, props to Westbrook. Old school. I like it. I get it. He's not my favorite player, but I respect the hell out of Westbrook. Something else that jumped out to me. Can we acknowledge now? Now, people like me, 40s and 50s, who grew up with the Bulls, have always known the Michael story's not linear. He didn't win without Phil Jackson, and he didn't win without Scottie Pippen. He was just unbelievable. But now, a lot of the mythology, you can all acknowledge now, the 20 and 30-year-olds who didn't see it live, Michael didn't do anything without Pippen and Phil Jackson. And you can think two thoughts simultaneously. You can think with one side of your brain, Michael's the best ever, and then think, but he didn't win squat without Pippen and Phil Jackson. And it's okay. He's both. Remember that last night they told you when Pippen, you know, didn't rehab and Michael had to start the year with him? 15 games, they were 8-7. And by the way, he ran through Doug Collins and Stan Albrecht, and in the series against Boston, he scored 49 and 63. Yeah, and they lost both of them. The reality, even Michael Jordan admitted, you say my name, you got to say Pippen. You can think two things simultaneously. Michael's the best ever, but even Michael needed the right coach and the right Robin to his Batman. So far, this is mostly, it mostly through two parts of it, amplified. Everything I knew, it just gave you a little dirt. This was the greatest team I ever saw. It was the most glamorous team I ever saw. And it was the most relentless team I ever saw. Just nobody outworked them. Michael had a status. He was refined. He was dignified. There was a class with him that I think there's a lot of really classy guys in sports, but I think only Brady has that, where Brady feels like he could just buy all the other quarterbacks. Michael, right now, even when he came into the league early, there was just a dignity and he was royalty. He was American sports royalty. But I got one overriding thought here is that, and this is a message. Because people my age know what I'm about to say. And I don't want to come off as a cranky old fart lecturing people. But most 20-year-olds in the media and most 18, 19-year-olds, there's a message in this whole damn thing. Michael Jordan's the best basketball player ever. And he had obstacles the whole way. Did his dad love his brother more than him? His brother physically beat him up playing basketball. He got cut in high school. His GM often felt like he had no respect for him. The owner would not give him a new deal, even though he was so severely underpaid for 7 of his 8 years. Go look at Michael Jordan's life. He then breaks his foot. Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player ever. He fought with the Pistons. He fought with his GM. He fought with his owner. He fought with his body. He fought with his brother. He fought with his dad. It ain't easy. You want to be great? Stop whining because somebody sent you a mean tweet. It's hard. Michael Jordan's whole career, why he's so hard? Why he's so tough? Because it was rough. It was rough for him. Think about being as good-looking as him, as fashionable as him, as smart as him, as great as him. He signed a bad early contract. The owner wasn't always in his corner. The GM was the worst. Thank God Phil Jackson showed up, or maybe he goes through 7 coaches. Doug Collins he fought with, you haven't seen a lot of that yet. The high school stuff, his brother, his dad. I mean, thank God for MJ's mom. I mean, he didn't get a lot of love from the boys in the family. So this idea that we're all freaking out now because somebody said something on Twitter, I just can't. That's why guys like me laugh at all the people that get worked up on Twitter. Life's hard. Deal with it. Nobody wants your sob story. It's hard. I mean, Michael Jordan walked into the NBA. And he walks into a room. This is where he started laughing last night. It was good to see Michael Jordan laugh. Like he had a guttural laugh. And he was told by the documentary makers, he's like, a good team. He inherited a team that wasn't as popular as the local soccer team with a bunch of cokeheads and a GM that was a baseball scout. That's his road. And he got the living you know what kicked out of him by the Pistons, by the refs, by the Celtics. That's why he's great. He's not great despite that. He's great because of that. Just Michael Jordan is tough. And you know what? You saw that letter he sent his mom. He's a great kid. But Michael Jordan was about winning because he had to deal with nonsense his entire life. And so in the end, you were either about winning or you had no value to him. And I found Michael incredibly likable last night. He was worried about not being like, I've never liked Michael Jordan more than I liked him last night. I thought he was fantastic. He didn't have any time for nonsense. Because you know what? Some of his childhood was nonsense. Good God. We think people complain if they don't get this perfect linear path. That's not the way life works. That's not the way life works. I'm not analogous to Michael. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. God. I've gotten chairs thrown at me. Look at Joy, me. You don't get a job at the big network. It's hard. There's a lot of sucky days out there. Deal with it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I really like the documentary. There's a couple of reasons. Because for me and people that grew up with it, it's just great to go back down memory lane. It's really fun. A lot of the stories I know, a couple of them I didn't, but it's fun. I also think it's really cool. John Goulet's telling me this morning, younger people are like, yeah, I didn't know half of this stuff. I just knew they were great. So it's really cool. Like, we're all collectively, I'm reminiscing. Younger people are seeing stuff for the first time. I think it's a really communal experience that we're all enjoying. And I will say this. We romanticize the past a little bit too much. The guys in the old days, they all hated each other, and guys today are now all friends. Oh, really? So Danny Ainge and Michael Jordan are golfing on a day off. The star of the Bulls and a star of the Celtics are golfing during the playoff series. Yeah, they didn't hate each other. Magic and Bird, really close friends. By the way, Magic and Isaiah for years, really close friends. First of all, a lot of guys back then, they played cards, they golfed, they had fun, they chased it, they drank, they smoked cigars together off-season and probably in-season. The difference is this. Today's players are all paid well. The salary cap used to be closer to $25 million. Now it's well over $100 million. It'll be $200 million in 5, 6, 7 years. The bottom line now, when you sit down at the dinner table, anybody listening to my show that grew up in a big family, and maybe you grew up in a big family and your folks didn't have a ton of money, and, you know, they'd hand out dinner and you were sitting there saying, I got to get a roll. Because if I don't fight for the roll, I'm not getting a roll. And there's seven kids and I want to make sure I get that pork chop. And, oh, that pie, I got to fight for my legitimate piece of the pie. That used to be the old NBA. I mean, Michael Jordan was underpaid for 7 years. Scottie was underpaid. The stars were underpaid on the dynasty. Wins equaled revenue. Everybody was fighting for a very small financial pie. Now, Otto Porter's rich. Everybody's rich. We're paying $20 million a year for guys. And so everybody gets a second dessert. Everybody gets a third roll. Everybody gets a fourth piece of meatloaf. So it's not as desperate. You know, in life, if everybody gets a little more comfortable financially, there's not quite as much debt. That doesn't mean they're not competitive, but there's not quite as much desperation. And so the players today, if you put Michael and Scottie was making $27 million a year, not $2.2 million a year, you know what? He wouldn't have been so angry at the GM. He may not have liked him, but there wouldn't be this. And guys are different than women sometimes on this. We're all about the respect and are we being shown love and our egos. You know, I get it. But it's just a different world. A lot of guys back then got along. And by the way, you think Patrick Beverley's buddies now with rivals? You think Rondo is? You think, I mean, seriously, you think Kawhi wants to be buddies? Giannis is like, I don't want to be buddies with anybody. Blake Griffin doesn't get along with players. There's all sorts of guys in the NBA that do not want a buddy-buddy. Westbrook says his best friend's the ball. They're teammates he won't talk to. So this idea that current players are all softies and old guys are all tough, you know, it was a different world. A lot of friends back then. A lot of guys that don't want to talk to other guys now.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, Colin right, Colin wrong. I make a lot of mistakes throughout the course of a week, and let me call myself out a few times. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Listen, people love super teams. This has been my mantra for 20 years. When I first got my job at the other place, I remember one of my first days, I said, you know, all these guys that say they love underdogs, why don't you watch them? The even snarky Twitter last night fell in love with Michael Jordan. There's a reason we like the Avengers. There's a reason people go to Coachella. We like when you get stars all together and they're fascinating and you get the glamour and the great and the egos. It's fun. Hard work is great. I don't want to watch it. I want to watch stardom and glamour. And the 30 for 30 had all that.
Where Colin was wrong.
I love Tua. I think he's great. But now Peter King, Albert Breer, and Peter Schrager are all saying he could fall in the draft. Listen, we know the injury thing. I still contend he's a rare talent, and I would roll the dice on the injury if I'm like a Miami and I've got 13 picks. I could draft two quarterbacks, or I'm a Chargers where I've got a roster that could withstand a pick that doesn't pan out. But, you know, listen, the Wonderlic score was lower than you'd love. It's not, I mean, you know, Phil Sims had a bad one. It's not the end of the world. Everything is something. But the stories this morning, he's dropping a little.
Where Colin was right.
Carolina signed Christian McCaffrey to a monster deal last week. And did you hear what Matt Rhule said? His quotes were very telling. We want football guy first. Focused guy. True leader guy. He didn't have to say that. It's like when Tom Brady left New England. He said Tampa showed him warmth. Who was he taking a shot at? Belichick. The reality is, Cam is what I thought he was. Talented, but a lot of drama and distracted. And Matt Rhule made a point of saying it last week in his way.
Where Colin was wrong.
OBJ's not going to Minnesota. Now, my sources told me the same thing. But I did get very excited for about 2 hours because I've been told OBJ is putting on a good face, but Cleveland's not where he wants to be, ideally. But I got to take a wrong here because I went crazy for about 15 minutes to start my show. And I do think Minnesota is a good fit for OBJ, for the Vikings, and actually benefits Baker and the Browns. They can get more focused on all the elements they already have. How many mouths do you want Baker Mayfield to have to feed? But I'll take a wrong on that.
Where Colin was right.
Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame quarterback, said last week in a quote, he said, I watch all these young quarterbacks in the AFC, and it reminds me of the days when it was me and all the legends like Marino and me and all going up against Elway. And thank you, Jim Kelly. Again, we romanticize the past. There has never been a time in my life where fewer teams had bad quarterbacks and more team had franchise quarterbacks. And they're different. Lamar can run and throw. Patrick's got a great arm. So does Aaron. Kyler Murray. Russell Wilson's a little smaller than you'd like. All shapes and sizes. Big Ben's old, big, and gets hurt, but he's great. And Brady's old and not mobile, but he's accurate. We're getting so many different variations. This is the golden age of quarterbacks. This, now. I've been watching it since 1972. This is the best the quarterback position has ever been in my life right now, and Jim Kelly acknowledged it.
Where Colin was wrong.
We're all going to take a collective wrong on this. That we always think that LeBron James is looking at Michael, and he's got Michael in his head. Well, that's funny. The producers of this now acknowledging that Michael Jordan was willing to do this documentary after LeBron James came back to beat the Warriors and was holding a trophy in Cleveland, and people started talking about, you know, LeBron may be better than Michael Jordan. And suddenly, what do you know? Michael was like, you know those old tapes I said you could never run? You can run them now. Don't kid yourself. Michael's like the rest of us. He's human. He doesn't want his legacy dipping. It's not good for his shoe brand. It's not good for him, right? We're all wrong on that one.
Where Colin was right.
Kirk Cousins this week said, quote, I wouldn't mind playing with no fans if we have to. I'd welcome it. Yeah, that's because no fans equals less pressure and no critics. Inadvertently, Kirk Cousins acknowledged what we've been saying is He doesn't like the pressure. I mean, how in the world does he go 0-9 on Monday Night Football? He wins 65% of his games. And Monday Night Football is not flex scheduling. It's not like Sunday Night Football where if you were 0-9 in Sunday Night Football, you could say, yeah, you always get in the big marquee games against the best teams. On Monday Night Football, he's been the favorite and lost multiple times. He didn't mean to acknowledge it, but the greats don't want to play in an empty stadium. LeBron's like, I won't play if there's no fans. Kirk Cousins is, I'd welcome it. Kind of acknowledging what we've said. He doesn't like the heat.
Where Colin was wrong.
I just don't get this. The NBA's new model going forward is let's take anonymous high school players to most, put them in an anonymous minor league system, and then put them on a bad team. The only reason I know who Zion is Duke. But Jalen Green chose the D-League over college, and it looks like this is what the NBA wants. To go to Rio Grande, some rural community with a crappy coach for a couple of years. You going to tell me Mike Krzyzewski doesn't have value? Now, I think the G League's got better players than college basketball, but for 6 months for the business part of it, playing at Duke or Kansas doesn't have some promotional value. Isn't that how Zion got a shoe contract? You'll make it up. I don't get it.
Where Colin was right.
LeBron currently with his uninterrupted Spring Hill entertainment business now has efficiently 23 things you can watch on 14 different platforms. We predicted LeBron would go to the Lakers over Philadelphia that had a much better roster and over Houston that had a better roster. Why? As we call it, the mogul stage. There's the show-off stage, accumulate title stage, and then the mogul stage. You cannot do what LeBron has done in Philadelphia. 23 shows on 14 platforms. He came here for basketball, too, and business.
Where Colin was wrong.
I don't like teams signing long contracts in sports. I think it's just doesn't make any sense. First of all, a guy can get hurt. Second of all, you know, a lot of guys, you give them a 10-year deal, 8-year deal, they lose their passion. Number three, how do you know what a player is going to be 8 years from now? Some deteriorate. Some guys are late bloomers, some early bloomers. But I will say this after watching the Last Dance documentary. Michael had an 8-year deal. Pippen had a 7-year deal. They were very team beneficial. I mean, for about 7 years, that organization made so much money and was paying the best duo in league history, you know, nickels on the dollar. I don't like long contracts. I think they're awful. If I ever owned a team, I wouldn't want one. But man, those are the two best long contracts in sports history.
Where Colin was right.
The Jaguars want to trade Leonard Fournette. Folks, this is why I say Joe Burrow's good. He's not Trevor Lawrence. Nobody was tanking for Joe Burrow. The Jaguars are not even hiding it now. They made a decision last year with a Jalen Ramsey trade. Once Nick Foles got hurt early, they're like, we can't win with Nick Foles. We're not going to win with Gardner Minshew. We got to go get Trevor Lawrence. They're not even hiding it now. They're just getting rid of anybody that's any good. Why? You don't do this in the NFL. You do this if you're the Colts and you can see Andrew Luck, and you do this if you're the Jags that can see Trevor Lawrence. That speaks volumes about the transformational talent in next year's quarterback class. These are good prospects. He's an all-time prospect. Calling right, calling wrong.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Ahmad Rashad was not only a notable broadcaster, he was a hell of a football player, played for a decade in the NFL, was a Pro Bowl level wide receiver for four of those years, and he was drafted. He played at Oregon before they were Oregon. Wide receivers out of Oregon did not go number four in the first round until Ahmad Rashad. All you guys know the snazzy uniform Oregon, the Phil Knight Oregon. He was great before that at Oregon, and he is now the NBA ambassador for the commissioner. He did that show for years. A lot of us watched NBA Inside Stuff, and when I watched him on NBC, he was Jordan's guy. And he took some heat for that, but in the end, he gave me information I didn't get anywhere else, and I loved it. And Ahmad is joining us. First of all, thank you. You're a busy guy, and I appreciate you coming on my show.
Oh, Dylan, how are you doing, man? Very nice to to be here. Thanks for having me on. And I'm not that busy right now.
So what is your earliest memory of Michael Jordan, seeing him or meeting him?
It goes back. The first time I saw Michael Jordan and started to follow him, John McEnroe was a huge fan. Huge, huge fan. I was living in New York, and John is the one that turned me on to him. It's like, hey, you got to see this guy from North Carolina. He's absolutely great. Unbelievable. You got to see him. So from that point on, that was like in 1982, 83, somewhere around there. From then on, we started watching him all the time, and John and I would watch. We'd both be watching, you know, from either at home or together watching Michael do his thing. And that's how I first sort of knew, you know, all about him and how great of a player that he was. And then in, you know, obviously the 84 Olympics was another time that I saw him again. And I'd never met him until NBC got basketball. They got basketball, I believe, in 1989 or 1990.
Yeah.
One or the other. And in the summertime, Magic Johnson used to have this game called A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it was back in the day when all the players, all the stars from around the league would come out to L.A. and they would play in an all-star game. And it was an all-star game which was pretty competitive. You know, guys were – it was about reputations and about who was this and who was that. And so for NBC to sort of kick off their basketball thing, we showed that on television. We went out there to do that. It was our new team, and it was the first time I had sort of been at a game like this as a reporter. And Michael and I met then, and we just sort of hit it off. We exchanged numbers, and from that day forward, shoot, we talked probably, you know, every week, just about every kind of thing. We just became really, really good friends. And as it so happened, I ended up doing basketball on NBC in the game of the week. And, you know, every game of the week seemed to be the Chicago Bulls. and my job was to interview the star of the game, and the star of the game was always Michael.
You know, Ahmad, it is, again, I'm old enough to, you know, I've been doing this long enough that I watched the whole Michael thing. I lived through it. But I didn't get – I only saw a half a dozen times having covered him live or in a game. The stardom, women swooned, the fashion industry, Wall Street, middle America. Can you take me back to a moment where – and you've been around athletes your whole life – that you were with Michael in a semi-private situation, and it really hit you. I'm with Muhammad Ali. I'm with Pele. I'm with the biggest star in the world, period. May not even be sports.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever felt – I don't think I ever felt that. You know, I knew – you sort of knew what it was, but from the inside of it, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's just Michael. You know, who happened to play basketball. And I was just Ahmad, who happened to play football. And so it wasn't like, wow, this is – but there were certain things that would certainly throw you back. I mean, the fact of – to watch – you couldn't go anywhere. Like, we could never go to a store, or we could never go to a mall. You couldn't go – any of those things, or people would just follow you forever. I think the one thing I remember is one time when we're in Paris is that we had a car. We're going to get some cigars at a cigar store. And we must have had – I don't know, 10, 12 police cars in the front and in the back. And everywhere we went, the guy would drive up on the sidewalk so that when we got out of the van, it was like two steps to the door of the building we were going in. And then by the time we come out, there was hundreds of people surrounding everywhere. That was the biggest one. But there were scenes like that, you know, throughout the NBA year. I remember in Miami, you know, coming out of a hotel and just having people as far as you could see them. So it was... not only was he like the greatest player, but their team was the greatest team. There was a lot going on with that team, you know. And I used to sort of say, you know, it was like the Beatles. But then I'd have people go, "Who's the Beatles?" So it's like, you know, that's the end of that. I can't even explain it. Like, man, these guys are like the Beatles. Like, well, who's the Beatles?
It's funny. I know Kobe. When I watch Kobe, he was doing a movie, he was clearly inspired by Michael.
Yes.
Who inspired Michael? Was it like a David Thompson, I remember, or did he ever talk to that kind of stuff about you?
Yeah. David Thompson was one, and the other one, geez, I can't remember his name. Played for Denver. Played before David Thompson. There was two guys that he when he, and if I could think of their names, and you watch the way Michael played, you realize that is where his whole thing came from. I don't know. If I think of it, I'll call you back.
Yeah. No, I
but one of them was David Thompson.
Yeah.
One was David Thompson, and the other guy was, shoot.
Well, it wasn't Alex English because he didn't jump much, so I doubt it was Alex.
It was not Alex English.
who's supposed to be a great guy but was not a very vertical player. Ahmad Rashad is joining us. Listen, a lot of people speculate that Michael was willing to do this because, you know, LeBron's getting all this love. And, you know, Michael's got a massive shoe brand, and he doesn't want that brand dinged at all. And it's still the biggest selling shoe in basketball by far. Do you buy the reports that Michael kind of watched LeBron win, beat the Warriors, and thought, you know what, I'm going to give people a little let's give him a little bit of my life again. I wouldn't fault him for it, but do you buy those reports?
Colin, not at all. Not even the furthest thing from his mind. His whole attitude about this whole thing is, you know what? I did what I did, and there it is. You can decide whatever you want where that stands. I don't think he has any sort of – there's no competitive feeling in him about, you know, who was better, and or there's no competition between him and LeBron, none whatsoever. I mean, you can't draw him into any sort of conversation like that. The way he comes back and says, you know what, you can't compare eras. Is that there's no way that you can compare eras, and you can't. And he said, plus, we're never going to play one-on-one. So what? It's just a sports conversation about, you know, one person saying this guy was the greatest, the other person saying that guy was the greatest. But that's what sports is all about. Remember back in the day when you go and all you have your buddies, and you'd have your favorite player, and he'd have his favorite player, and you have these wonderful arguments about who's the best and who's not the best. But Michael, once he finished playing, that whole basketball thing is gone. I don't think that conversation would never even happen. If it was like, whoa, somebody's gaining on me, he's getting too much thing, let me put this thing out. I think that there was enough time, even when he decided to let the NBA follow him during that last year, there was no plan of ever letting this tape out. It was just something he was going to be able to have. And you could do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
And enough time went by, I guess, that he just kind of went, you know, let's do it and see what it is. And that's all. So you're going to just see it. But it wasn't in any sort of competitive way of, let me show you who I was. His whole thing is like, hey, you saw who I was, and that's what I was, and this is what I am now. So, no, there's no competition on that. I don't think there's any looking back and, you know, trying to prove who's better than who and any of that kind of stuff. I think that's just for a bar conversation that people can say things like that. But I can say for a fact that that's not the reason why he let that tape out.
Ahmad Rashad joining us, friends of Michael, the former Pro Bowl wide receiver, a very notable 10-year career, also now NBA ambassador for the commissioner, Adam Silver. You know, I was struck when you watch Michael. You know, I think sometimes we forget how hard the road was. The fights with his mm-hmm. brother, his relationship with his dad, cut in high school, the injury, broke his foot, getting knocked to the ground, having to deal with multiple coaches. You know, like, I understand the reservoir of, not animosity, but the chip on the shoulder. When you first met him, had he eclipsed that, or was he still going through that sort of, I'm going to prove the world they don't want to mess with me? Who was the Jordan you met?
That one. And I think he's been that one for quite some time. And I think that's something that cannot be coached. And he's not the only person that, I think if you talk to Magic Johnson or Larry Bird or Kareem or Dennis Rodman for that matter, and talk about, there was always a place where they could go to be somebody. You know, whatever that was going on in your life and whatever was going the other way, there was a basketball court to go to prove who you were. Now, some guys, you know, had that competitive spirit that they were going to go, I'm going to show you I'm the best, you know, there is. Other guys, it's like, I'm the best today, you know. But great ones are, I'm the best all the time. You know, there's something that you just can't teach. It's Michael had that. Put your foot on their throat. Kobe had that, put your foot on their throat. So there were a lot of guys that were just different. They weren't just great, but they also had that killer instinct.
Yeah.
You know, that they were competitive about everything. And Michael has been competitive about everything. He hates to lose to me in golf, probably as much as he hates losing at anything. So it's just the way it's people's makeup, you know, and I guess you could have it at all single levels. There's probably a lot of guys that hate to lose, but they do anyway. Then there's certain guys that hate to lose and they very seldom do lose.
You know, I found
a commitment there.
Yeah, I found Michael incredibly likable last night. I loved when he was laughing when his mom was reading the letter, and it was really a joyful laugh. I laughed when he was told that the Bulls, when he joined the team, were called the Traveling Cocaine Circus, and he just belly laughed. You get to see Michael. I get the intense Michael. I get the regal right. Michael. But he really was easy to laugh. I found that such a likable quality, and that's probably the Michael you see.
Wasn't that great, Colin, to
yes.
be able to see that?
Yes.
I mean, what this film does, it lets you see Michael. That's him. And before that, you never saw that. He never let you see that.
Yep.
He let you see he was 2-3 feet away from you. You never got to get inside that. I mean, just anybody out there. But for this, and I think that he's also feels like this is the first time that fans everywhere are like a fly on the wall to see him as he really is. And that's, that's a little uncomfortable.
Right.
But it is what it is. And I think that's the beauty in this documentary is you get to see the sacrifices. You get to see the guy reacting like a normal person. Before, you'd have never saw that.
Yeah.
He didn't ever let you see that.
Yeah.
Now it's like, hey, man, I'm happy in my life. I've done whatever I've tried to do. I'm moving forward with everything else I'm doing. So it's kind of fun to look back at this and see that, you know what, I was like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I was just committed to try to be in the best I could possibly be. And as far as I'm concerned, he's the most committed person I've ever seen. We would here's an example. We would, after every game during the finals, there was a bunch of us that would sort of hang out. It was like Howard White, Quinn Buckner, and myself, and Michael. We'd get a room, we'd go smoke cigars, and talk about the game from the minute it started to it ended. And we'd be up there talking and just talking, and this happened and that happened, and what about this and all of that, till like 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
At 6 o'clock in the morning, Michael was in the gym.
Yeah.
Never missing.
That's amazing. Real pleasure for me, Ahmad. I just found Michael so likable, and it was so nice to see him laugh. And I just can't wait to watch the remaining 8 episodes. Ahmad, thanks for coming on our show today. I appreciate it, man.
You are very, very welcome. And you know I'm from Tacoma, and you're from Seattle. So
yes.
We're homeboys.
Oh, what did you go to high school in Tacoma? Stadium?
Mount Tahoma.
You went to Mount Tahoma.
Yeah, and didn't you go? Did you go to Rainier?
No, I went to a very small school on the coast of Washington in a small town that's largely overlooked even on maps. So you went to Mount Tahoma's a real football school. They had some real good teams when I was a kid growing up.
What? Tell me which wasn't in the city.
Westport, Washington, by Aberdeen.
I know where Westport is. I ran track meets in Westport before.
And I bet you won them. I bet you did. All right. Thanks, man.
You're very welcome.